Bible John is what we're covering today, which is, it's a mystery. It's never been solved. And we haven't had a mystery yet, have we?
No.
I mean...
Enfield. Eh. But not really. But also we think we know what this is anyway. Or who this is.
Spoilers. Oh my God.
Straight in.
Straight in with the spoilers. Three women were murdered in the East End of Glasgow between 1968 and 1969. Their killer has never been convicted, and the circumstances in which the bodies were found is, it's beyond a shadow of a doubt, just one person, because it's so, so specific. There are a lot of theories flying around about who this mysterious killer could be. Some of them are better than others. Some of them are feasible, and some of them are just like complete lazy bullshit. The investigation has been described as the biggest investigation in Scotland's legal history. The investigation is still going on. It's just taken a bit of a different form.
60 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, what? I wouldn't be too proud about saying it's Scotland's biggest...
Maybe they mean like longest and least conclusive.
Longest and most unsuccessful investigation ever.
All three victims were seen leaving the Barrowlands Ballroom in Glasgow with a man, and they were never seen alive again. And the really interesting thing about these murders is all three women were on their periods.
It's more than a coincidence, isn't it?
That's what he was looking for. So yeah, all three met their killer, who sniffed out their periods at the Barrowlands Ballroom, which is still going, and it was famous at the time for its over 25 nights, which people called grab a granny, which is gross.
I find that incredibly offensive as a 27-year-old woman.
You're over the hill now. You're a granny.
I find that very, very
offensive.
You and
me both. It's where you would go if you wanted to pick up a married woman. So married women would go there without their husbands to pick up boy toys.
Toy boys.
Toy boys?
Yeah, toy boys.
Oh yeah.
Good. Bible John's first victim was Patricia Docker. On the 23rd of February 1968, the naked body of a 25-year-old nurse was found by a man on his way to work, yards from where she lived. She had been raped and strangled, left completely naked as her clothes and handbag had been taken. The previous night, she had told her parents that she was going out dancing at a nearby club called The Majestic. But either she went straight to the Barrowlands instead, or decided to go there towards the end of her evening. This significantly slowed down the police investigation, as they had been focusing their search on the wrong dance hall. So they'd been focusing on the Majestic instead of the Barrowlands, which is where she actually went missing from. And at this point, unfortunately, the police were not treating this murder as anything particularly out of the ordinary. What the hell kind of situation is going on up there? That 25-year-old woman found raped, strangled, and naked because all her things have been taken, including her clothes, yards from her house, was being treated as nothing out of the ordinary.
I don't want to be particularly rude about Glasgow. It's a rough end of town.
Yeah, that sounds like it. But then again, on Friday the 15th of August 1969, mother of three, Jemima MacDonald, 32, also went for a night out at the Barrowland Ballroom.
So she's way over the hill. She's like a great granny.
Oh my God, 100%. So the next day, Jemima's sister, Margaret, heard rumours in the area that young children were seen leaving an old tenement building talking about the body. It was very unlike Jemima to leave her children, so by Monday morning, Margaret was beside herself and, fearing the worst, went to the old building herself, where she found Jemima's battered body. She had been strangled, raped, and beaten to death. Unlike Patricia Docker, Jemima was fully clothed when her body was found. So Margaret, the sister, just decides, my sister didn't come home. That's weird, because she's got kids. And so she hears people talking about a dead body in an old tenement building and goes and checks that out on Monday instead of just calling the police.
Yeah, that seems to be the situation, which is just a bizarre choice, I think.
Yeah, and if this woman, Jemima, lived in the local area, wouldn't other people have seen the body and been like, oh, that's Jemima?
I mean, maybe she was in pretty poor shape. I don't know. Yeah. And also, it's an abandoned building. No one goes in there. And I feel like that's
just the kids.
It's the kids, yeah. The kids go and play. And who was that kid who murdered that other kid?
Mary Bell.
Yes.
My old mate.
Witnesses said they had seen Jemima leaving the Barrowlands at midnight with a tall, slim young man with red hair. Police conducted door-to-door inquiries at the time and found one woman who remembered hearing screams coming from the same building where Jemima was found, but she said she was unsure of the time, so obviously they can't use that as, like, proper evidence. That's no good to anyone. And now we come to the third victim, which is really the one that made the police sit up and take notice of what was going on. Her name was Helen Puttock. She was a 29-year-old mother of two who was married to John Puttock, who was in the army. They had just come back from a posting in Germany. They'd literally just moved back to Scotland. On the 31st of October, 1969...
Halloween.
It is Halloween.
Yeah.
But, yes, so on Halloween 1969, Helen told her husband that she was going out dancing with her sister Jean. He was not keen on this at all, presumably because he knew she was going to where married women went to pick up people who weren't their husbands. So he eventually sort of gave in and said, you can go as long as you promise me you take a taxi home, gave us some money. And so she goes out with her sister Jean and they get to the Barrowlands and they meet two men called John, one of whom would become known as Castle Milk John because that's all they really knew about him, that just he was from that area. And the other one, who is the infamous Bible John. So Jean is actually the only person, she's the most reliable because she spent an evening with this guy. Bible John told Jean that his name was either John Templeton or John Sempleton.
Are you fucking kidding?
I wish I was.
I can immediately think of 10 names, fake surnames. Sempleton. So it's like Templeton Schmempleton, and he's like, it's Mempleton.
I think poor Jeannie might have been a little bit worse for wear. I think she probably can't really remember.
I mean, she's literally, that she just sounds smashed. Like the most like sarcastic comment to give a policeman, like interviewing, or a police officer interviewing her. So what was his name? John Templeton Schmempleton. And they were just like, right, so it's either John Templeton or it's John Sempleton or Schmempleton.
Exactly.
Good. That makes sense.
So Castle Milk John goes home on his own. He must have been the wingman in this situation, yep. I think. A murder wingman.
Everyone needs one of those. You're kind of like my murder wingman and I'm like yours.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's just what we should have named our podcast.
Murder wingmen. Let's rebrand. Let's just stop this. Let's go back.
Guys, we're going to need a couple of weeks off. We're relaunching.
Just to change the name.
So, Helen and Jean get in a taxi with John Sempleton Templeton.
Schmempleton.
Parker Bowles. The conversation that Jean remembers from the taxi is what would lead the media to calling this killer Bible John.
Which is a fantastic name.
Such a good one.
I mean, immediately as soon as whistles, I was like, we have to do this case.
It's because there are so many shit ones.
There are terrible ones.
I feel like the Suffolk Strangler is quite a good one.
That's a good one. The trash bag killer. Lame. I mean, literally in this country, that would be the bin bag killer. Like, that's a fucking terrible name. But the story behind it is so good. You know this one. It's like the guy who was the radiographer, the doctor in The Exorcist. In the film, The Exorcist, the guy who plays the doctor, during the filming of that movie, legitimate full-time serial killer.
While they were filming as well. It's not
so while he's just like touching that little girl Reagan and being like, you know, possessed, not possessed, let's figure it out. He was out killing dudes in his spare time and putting them in trash bags and being called the trash bag killer, aka the bin bag,
killer. The bum bag killer. That's quite a good one.
The bum bag killer. In America, the fanny pack killer, that would be, which is just the worst. Fanny means something completely different here. Back to Bible John.
When I saw the name Bible John, I knew like a little bit about it. I knew it was Scotland. I knew it was women. But I really was expecting some sort of like religious maniac. Bible verses scrawled on walls in human shit. But so what he says in the taxi is that he doesn't drink at Hogmanay.
What's Hogmanay?
Hogmanay is New Year. It's a really big celebration in Scotland. Apparently what people do is in the day they clean their house and then go round. There's a street party in Edinburgh. It's like a big deal, yeah. Fireworks.
That's where they do that song, right? Auld Lang Syne?
Yeah.
So yes, he doesn't drink at New Year's, he prays. Good.
And that his father referred to dance halls as dens of iniquity. I don't think that's particularly...
Burn. Fucking hell, man.
It's quite a good turn of phrase, though. Den of iniquity.
It is. I mean, yes, if you want to say things like that,
I feel like the pub down my road is absolutely a den of iniquity. It's not like, and I shall smite thee with my, like...
No, but then also I think the whole, like, him murdering women who are on their periods, we come into it later about, like, kind of the religious significance of menstruation, women, these crazy people, like these crazy religious nuts, and you need one thing, and then it gets like religious delusions, murder, all linked. Yeah, I feel like they're stuff.
Yeah, so they weren't terrifying, but they were enough for Jean. She was sufficiently creeped out.
She was.
She got out of the taxi.
She did. So Jean got out of the taxi first, leaving Helen with the stranger being Bible John. Now, the cab drops the pair off yards away from Helen's house at 1 a.m. in the morning. Later in a police interview, the taxi driver would admit that he had taken a wrong turn, and Helen was so frustrated by this. She had told him that she'll just jump out where they were, and the man got out with her. He paid for the taxi and ran after her. The driver said that he then saw the man grab Helen, and her resisting him, but that he had thought it was just a lover's quarrel and so he had just driven off. I mean, I know, I can tell by the look you're giving me that you're judging this taxi driver.
But
I kind of also think, like, how many scenarios have you been in where you've witnessed something weird? I would probably very rarely intervene in a situation like that, because what are you going to do? And if it is just a lover's quarrel, you'll just look like a massive dick.
Yeah, I know.
They've been drinking. It's 1 a.m. He pays for the taxi. They both get out. They've been in the taxi together. And maybe there was no red flags in there. He was just a guy they'd been chatting to. Maybe if in the taxi, there'd been something more obvious and sinister about it. But I don't know. I don't really blame the guy. It's sad.
We'll let you off.
She ends up being dead. But
I mean, he probably feels bad enough about it. As exactly. It is. He doesn't need my help.
He doesn't need you ruining his good name on this podcast. And so her husband, Helen, was worried that Helen had come home, but eventually he fell asleep at 2 a.m. in the morning. So this is an hour after her taxi had stopped by their house. And a dog walker, it's always a dog walker,
always
found Helen at 6 a.m. lying in the court next to her house. She was fully clothed. The contents of her missing handbag were strewn around her. She had been strangled with her own tights. There were marks on her face and body indicating that there had been a struggle. And there was also a deep bite mark on her leg. That makes me feel so sick. Just like someone taking a bite out of
you. It must have, like, broken skin.
Like biting human flesh, like, off a dead body that you've just strangled. Like, sick fuck. A quick roundup, though, of the similarities between the three women who had all been murdered. All three of them, as we touched upon, were menstruating at the time of their murders. They had all met their killers at the Barrowlands. They were all strangled with their own tights. They were all raped. They were all beaten. Their handbags were missing. And they were left out in the open in various states of undress. Such a specific MO.
It is so specific. So it's like, absolutely, this has to be the same person.
Yeah.
He's taking the same trophies, mm-hmm. He's doing the same things.
And to the same type of women. I mean, Bundy liked to kill women who looked like his ex-girlfriend who had dark brown hair parted down the centre, and this guy was like, if you're on your period, you're done. I'm going to murder you. They needed a more discreet solution, I think, because I think this leads us quite nicely onto, like, well, how did he actually know they were on their periods?
For a while, I was reasonably convinced that maybe he just had the world's shittest superpower, I mean, and he could just sort of sniff them out.
If I've been afflicted with this shit superpower, I'm going to start murdering
exactly.
You. Yeah, if you trigger it.
However, I sort of calmed down a bit, was a bit more logical. So in the olden times, in the 60s, they didn't have the sort of like adhesive pads that you just sort of stick in your pants today.
But they had like, they all wore pants, but they all knew that things could like be sticky. So why weren't they just like
making sanitary products were like at the top of anyone's list in the late 60s.
And they are now. Hashtag tampon tax.
Scotland's doing much better than us.
They are doing much better than us.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Scotland have just passed a thing where they are giving free sanitary products to people who can't afford them.
And here we're still taxing tampons and sanitary products as luxury items. There's nothing that makes me feel more luxuriated. Is that a word?
No.
In luxury. Luxurious.
There you go.
Than when I go buy myself some tampons.
Society just needs to get over periods, it happens. This is my theory of how he could know. So they had these olden tiny sanitary towels that had like a belt that connected it. So have you ever seen a chastity belt in a museum?
It's like a chastity belt. But like for that. Sanitary. Reasons.
Yes, exactly. So it was like a plastic belt, and I feel like if you touched someone's waist, you would probably be able to feel it if you knew what you were looking for.
Oh my god, imagine like wanting to wear a nice little dress and you have to wear a fucking like sanitary utility belt under it. Like,
that's exactly what it is. It's a sanitary utility
belt.
Fuck
off.
And they were dancing, like there would have been hands on waists, etc. I think that's how he must have known.
I think that's probably the most likely scenario. Either that or he's working in their local boots. Anyone who comes in to buy a sanitary belt.
Oh, and he times them.
I'm going to murder you.
He has a calendar.
Yeah, I see you.
I see you.
I'm going to get you. That's probably the most likely reason.
As you can imagine, at this point, Glasgow is terrified. The police took 50,000 witness statements and had over 1,000 suspects.
That screams of, like, police incompetence to me. How have you got 1,000 suspects?
They just had no idea. I think it was literally anyone who walked down the road, anyone who'd ever been to the Barrowlands ever.
Yeah, inefficient police work though.
But mainly from Jean's evidence, they managed a sketch of Bible John, which is very famous.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so now he has a face, this killer,
mm-hmm.
which just sort of stirs people up even more.
Yeah.
And this investigation has never really been closed. It's just called something different now. But they did throw up a few suspects, some of which are feasible and some of them are just not. John McInnes was a reasonable suspect, but all they really had on him was that he was violent, he was bad news, and he was in Glasgow at the time. So he's a military man. He was in the Scots Guards, and he killed himself when he was 41 by slashing his brachial artery, which is quite an odd thing to do. That's quite an odd way.
It's the one in your arm, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that is an odd way to kill yourself, but was he murdered? And they were just like...
Maybe, but apparently psychological assessment of him was that he was a psychopath, and that he may have killed himself in such
over the top way.
Yeah, such a bizarre way because he was like looking for the final thrill. Like,
did he have like PTSD? Where were the Scots Guard? Like,
everywhere. I mean, this would have been.
Maybe he had PTSD.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Possibly. McInnes' body was exhumed in 1996 to check his DNA against a semen sample found on Helen Puttock's tights, but the results were inconclusive due to the sample being improperly stored. Obviously, in the 60s, they didn't have the resources to deal
semen
with...
Semen fridges.
Semen fridges. I am unsure of the shelf life of semen. I don't imagine it's 40 years.
It's definitely not 40 years.
Am I wrong in thinking that it can survive 3 days outside the body?
Yes, you're wrong. Like, no, it can... Very wrong. Like, it can survive for... You're right in that it can survive for 3 days, but it can survive for 3 days inside your body.
Okay, so it can just be, like, hanging out.
Yeah, so I think that if you have recently had sexual intercourse that's unprotected and there is semen inside you, then I think that it can survive inside you for 3 days.
Okay.
So you might, like, ovulate 2 days after you've had sex, but you could still get pregnant. So the semen will just, like...
Got it. Okay. So it's not,
hang
like,
around. You
instead
wanna,
of towels.
No, you want to... Yeah. Oh, my God, no. So it's not like those girls used to write into, like, Ms. Magazine or Teen Cosmo and be like, oh, I used my boyfriend's towel. Am I pregnant now? And it's like, well, no.
Literally, that was me.
No, you're not. Or can I get pregnant from a toilet seat? No, you can't fucking get pregnant from a toilet seat. You're pointing at yourself like you have thought that.
I definitely have thought that.
There you go. I hope that this is a big...
Still have to fight those thoughts.
This is a big game changer for you, that you now no longer need to worry about these things. You cannot get pregnant like that. And if worried, maybe just carry some spermicide around with you and just dab that shit everywhere.
Just spray. Like people who have hand sanitizer.
He just spray spermicide on your crotch every now and again. Like, you know, when people get off public transport and put hand sand on their hands, just get off the bus and spray your crotch with spermicide. There you go.
I'm not letting you make some friends.
Yeah, trick me once. Shame on you.
you can laugh twice.
But
guess who's not getting pregnant? This bitch.
Guess he's gonna smell like spermicide.
You know what spermicide smells like?
I think it smells a bit like...
Oh, how do you
bleachy?
Know?
Because it's like, I mean, anyway, let's just move away from it. Enough talk of spermicide and how all the ways you can't get pregnant in.
So the same sample was used much later. In 2004, the police announced further DNA tests on multiple different people that yielded an 80% match. If the sample is too disintegrated to be able to use it on John McInnes, how is it yielding an 80%?
I also, like, don't really understand that, because it's like, surely either it's a match, it's not a match, or it's, like, inconclusive.
Yeah.
But what is this? Well, I guess maybe 80% just makes it inconclusive. Like, they can't say for sure.
But is 80%, is that, like, you're related?
But then why wouldn't they just say that? Because I think there's, like, certain markers that would prove it was, like, it's not him, but it's, like, maybe a brother or a father or something. I don't really get it. And they don't elaborate on that. So I think... And also, I think, when was this? This was in 1996. Like, how good was our DNA checking 20 years ago?
Well, the 80% was in 2004.
Oh, was it? Well... Yeah.
Even still, though.
I mean, I don't know. I don't really understand what
And
that
also,
means.
After Amanda Knox, I don't trust DNA for shit anyway.
Oh, also a sample that was already, they've admitted, was improperly stored for 40 years, like...
Yeah, so John McInnes is clear at this. I'm sure he was a piece of shit, but he wasn't this particular piece of shit.
No.
There's another... I hate this one. I hate this so much. One of the suspects was Peter Sutcliffe.
There's nothing else that's similar. The type, the victimology, none of it. Like, Peter Sutcliffe was going after women who lived very high-risk lifestyles. This person... was probably a bit more criminally sophisticated, because he was managing to kill women who lived very low-risk lifestyles.
Yes, yeah.
They were married, they had children, they were going out for a night every now and again at a dance club called the Barrowlands, which, by all sounds perfectly normal.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a lazy fucking theory. And I hate that it's just like, there must be only one British man who is capable of killing, like, this. Yeah. It's so
no,
dumb.
No, it is dumb. And I'm glad I got to use my little Game of Thrones geography. The next theory is the military leave theory. Although this one could be applied also to John McInnes, it's also one that we don't really have time for because, again, it's quite lazy and it doesn't really answered that many questions. So the theory goes that these three murders could only have been committed by someone in the military who was on leave and then went back to active service, which was why the murders stopped. There are so many reasons why the murders could have stopped. I mean, I do get that because a lot of times they do think, like, is this person been locked up for another crime? Did they die? Did they become, you know, disabled in some way that stopped them being able to do this? Did they move away? Or did they go back after military leave? But, I mean, I can understand wanting to think that these acts could only have been committed by someone who had seen true horror. But honestly,
just grow up. Yeah, I do get that it's, you would want to think that the only way someone could commit something so horrific and the only reason we can't find them is because they've gone back to the army. But it's pulled out of thin air. It really is.
It is. And that's why we're not really going to talk about that one too much. So the next one, the final one, the one that is probably most likely and that we think is most likely is Peter Tobin. And for those of you who may not know who Peter Tobin is, we might come back and do an episode on him another time because he's a whole nother hell of fun, because he is a fucking crazy bastard.
Yeah.
Like, a really bad serial killer.
Real twisted fucker.
Really bad British serial killer. He did some horrendous things, murdered, you know, countless women. And Tobin is by far the most popular choice for Bible John, with Professor David Wilson, who is one of the top British serial killer experts.
He says.
He claims himself. He's a bit of a documentary whore. If you've ever watched any British true crime documentary, guarantee Professor David Wilson is in there. And so he claims that he could stake his reputation and his career on the fact that Tobin and Bible John are one and the same.
Also, I think it's important to note, he did say that just after he'd released a book on Peter Tobin.
Oh yeah, he's very much, he knows how to promote himself.
He's playing the game.
So Peter Tobin is currently serving a whole of life order for the murders of three victims between 1991 and 2006. We already know that he is definitely a murdering bastard, but was he this murdering bastard is the question. So he was diagnosed as a psychopath by a senior psychologist. The real difference between, like, what some people would maybe, like, call a psychotic killer or a psychopathic killer.
Mm. I think they are confused a lot.
They are confused a lot.
I also think psychopath is just, like, bandied around
God,
far too much.
I hate it when people just call everyone, like, a psycho or a schizo, and I'm like,
you don't know what that means.
It doesn't, yeah, and I'm just kind of like, we should all educate ourselves on these things. And I think a really key difference between psychotic and psychopathic is such an important distinction to make. Like, I think the clearest way to make it is, like, someone who's psychotic doesn't know what they're doing and doesn't know what they're doing is wrong. So a classic example is someone like Richard Chase, the vampire of Sacramento. Go, he'd break into people's houses, murder them, and then walk out of their houses covered in blood, having made no attempts to clean anything up, having made no attempts to not be seen, because he didn't know what he was doing was wrong. It's like, they're mad, not bad. And yes, with a psychopathic killer, they know exactly what they're doing. It's calculated, it's manipulative, it's very, very put together. They know exactly what they're doing is wrong, and they make every attempt to cover it up.
I think it's a control thing. I feel like a psychotic killer is completely out of control, yeah, and a psychopathic killer has never been more in control in their life.
Yeah. Apart from when they allow themselves to lose control,
yeah,
and to kill. So I think Bundy is a great example of a psychopathic killer. Mm. He knew how to cover it. He had his face that he put on when he was sat at the suicide hotline center next to Anne Rule, that no one knew that he was the murderer that was terrifying that entire state.
Did you see that meme that's like Ted Bundy being like on the suicide hotline, like, oh, no need to kill yourself, where do you live then?
Oh, Bundy's great. I mean, he's a monster, an absolute monster, and I think that's a perfect example. I would veer away from calling someone who was psychotic a monster, because they're completely out of control. But I think, again, it's kind of a Hollywood confusion.
Hollywood, you have so much to answer for.
I think that really helps sort of mad versus bad. Background check on Tobin. He was born in 1946, and Tobin was the second of eight children. He spent a lot of his youth in young offenders institutions, and he moved around a lot.
Classic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but also,
Red West alert.
Oh, 100%. And also, these guys, or girls, you know, people have psychopathic tendencies. They can only fake it for so long. Mm. The reason they move around and live quite transient lifestyles is because they get found out sooner or later, their lives catch up with them, and they have to move on. And also, they have very low sort of like boredom thresholds. So he worked as a handyman. He moved around a lot, all over England, all over Scotland. And he would have three wives, all of whom would report that he was very violent while Whilst on the outside and when in public, he would remain well-dressed and charming. But again, this is so classic of whether it's like domestic abuse situations or anything, or more sort of like a grievous in this sense. It was this thing of like them putting on a very good front outside, being very, very in control. Again, that's a very psychopathic tendency because your image is very, very important.
Oh, absolutely.
Peter Tobin was first imprisoned for rape in 1993 and he was released in 2004. This is scattered over a lot, we thought, in articles and in documentaries made about Peter Tobin, which there are so many, and you should definitely go watch one, because he's seriously a stone-cold, just absolute maniac. What actually happened with this particular rape that is not talked about very much is that he enticed two 14-year-old girls back to his flat. 14-year-old girls. And he's, what, in his 50s at this point, right?
Yeah.
And he raped both of them in front of his son. He stabs one of the girls, left the gas taps running, and then fled? Yes, absolutely rape, but how was this also not attempted murder?
That's attempted murder.
Like, he stabbed them.
He stabbed them and he left the gas running.
And also, come on, he's in his 50s when he commits this crime. That is a very violent crime to commit, for that to be your first crime.
And it's not a crime in your 50s.
No, no.
He lured them in. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Absolutely. This is not a first crime. And no one commits this in their 50s. It's pretty late stage to start raping and murdering. It was just clearly the first time he'd been caught.
To escape persecution for this crime, Tobin fled to Coventry.
I mean, those of you who don't know the British Isles geography, I mean, I think what I should do is overlay this with a little bit of Game of Thrones.
You have been itching to get, just do it.
I really think that we should be sensitive to our ignorant British listeners and our non-British listeners. So, okay, great. So imagine the Westeros map. Yeah, you're with me. That is basically a reverse map of the British Isles. When you're talking about where Glasgow is, we're talking about beyond the wall, like quite far in the land of always winter. And then where Hannah's laughing because she doesn't watch Game of Thrones.
Would you like to tell us where Coventry is on the Westeros map?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. Let me think. I'd say, like, it's the Riverlands.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that means nothing to you. The listeners will know.
So he fled to Coventry and joined this... They call themselves a religious sect. I'm going to say cult. Called the Jesus Fellowship, which is now called Jesus's Army.
Oh my god.
Yeah, serious. Very into sort of evangelical...
Why does Jesus need an army?
So many reasons. So they are the type of people that you see outside the tube telling you that Jesus loves you. It's them. And they do a lot of sort of feeding the needy type thing. So he was tracked down in this religious communal thing he was living in because someone recognised his car. For God's sake, dump your car. Like, that is...
Rule number one.
Yeah, seriously. But it's very important to note that Peter Tobin was a staunch Roman Catholic, an incredibly religious man. And also his three wives that he had over his life all said that when they were on their periods, he would just go into a violent rage. Like, it set him off. Him sort of helping homeless people and feeding the needy and all of that sort of thing, but simultaneously being able to rape and murder teenagers, shows there's a disconnect between women and people.
Absolutely. And it's kind of like a literal interpretation of like almost like the Old Testament. But you could put any religious text in front of somebody and they can interpret it in a way that allows them to treat women like shit.
Oh,
and to
absolutely.
Just to help the needy. Because honestly, I mean, if you read some of these religious texts, they do make women seem... They are inferior. They are, of course...
And they're dirty.
Like, it's subservient. And it's like, of course.
Yeah, like Christianity and Judaism, like in Leviticus, when it's the bit about thou shalt not lie with a man or the way you would with a woman, or like don't wear blended fibers and don't eat prawns. Really good bit of the Old Testament.
That's the best.
Revelation is the best one.
I have no idea.
I had to go to convent school. I've done my time.
Oh, mate. Yeah. I was in a Catholic school when I was very, very young and I first went to school. And it was in a different country, so it was, like, where they could, like, actually beat you. And so it was, like, run by actual sadistic nuns. And I remember I'd be, like, 5 or 6. I'd come home, lie in bed, and just cry because I thought I was going to go to hell.
Oh, no.
I mean, it was, like, full on fire and brimstone stuff.
Yeah.
So if I have any sort of ill feelings towards religion, that would be why.
Yeah.
Because if that's not child abuse... Please tell me what is.
So in Leviticus, menstruation comes up in the disease section. A woman is considered unclean for a day after she finishes her period. If a menstruating woman touches something, it is considered unclean. And if a man has sex with a menstruating woman, he is unclean for 7 days. And not only that, once a woman has finished her period, she's expected to seek atonement for this disgusting thing that she has just done.
Oh my god. She's done. Are you fucking kidding?
No, exactly. So it's, this part is that menstruation is used as proof that humans in general are fucking terrible, but women are even worse.
Of course, but it's like anything. I mean, even like what that play, The Crucible, everything is about like how women are still paying and will always have to pay the pain of childbirth. Everything is about you paying for the original sin.
Yes. Absolutely.
Eve committed.
Even Thomas Aquinas said that periods are proof that women are subservient to men and are a major reason why women to this day can still not be priests in the Catholic Church, because they are like impure, which is just gross. It's not just Christianity.
All the religions.
All of the religions. Let's get down on all of them.
Tell me one religion that doesn't oppress. And I'm not saying this is all religious people. Absolutely not. I'm saying like when it's organized religion in that sense, tell me one religion, if you go back to its core texts, doesn't oppress women and minorities.
Oh, I can't. I can't name one.
Absolutely. And this is the thing. So it's not just Christianity. It's all of them.
Yeah, in Islam, a woman, after she finishes her period, is supposed to undergo the same cleansing ritual that she would have to do if she had touched a dead body.
Yeah.
And in some parts of Nepal, like, women don't leave the house at all.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the Nepalese one is very, I can relate to that because my family are from India. I'm obviously very much an atheist, and so are my parents, but traditionally we are of Hindu descent, and in that religion, absolutely, if you are on your period, you are not allowed inside the temple. You, and in much more like sort of rural areas and much more like regressive areas, I mean, this is changing now obviously, but in some of the more rural areas, very much like this Nepalese one, you stay in your room if you're on your period. You don't touch anything.
So horrendous.
Exactly. And it's how it's like the evolution of that into modern day is like men on the internet making memes about, like, don't trust anything that bleeds for a week, a month, and doesn't die.
Oh, fucking... get fucked. Like, I...
Well, fuck off.
Scum of the earth. All religions have real issues surrounding menstruation and purity. As Tobin was fiercely Catholic, I can see how that ideology could have led to an attitude of women being dirty and disposable. Mm. But he still felt like he could feed the poor. But was it a penance? Was that how he figured it? Is that how he reconciled everything?
Maybe.
So like, oh, it's okay for me to rape and murder teenagers as long as I go and help some homeless people on my way home.
I know. It was almost like absolute like armchair psychologist, but something like he, if it says that it makes men who have sex with women who are menstruating impure after they've had sex with them, then is it almost like these women tempted him? And it's the classic thing, you see it in the Crucible, you see it in like these religious texts where it's like women tempting men into sexual desire. And you see that in so many different religions. And this idea that maybe he felt so sexually lustful after them, and it was their fault because they made him feel that way. He then rapes them. And then, oh my God, you've made me do this.
Yeah.
I've been tempted by you, you siren, and you're impure because you're on your period. You've made me impure now because you made me lust after you, made me have sex with you. I have to I'm going to murder you.
Absolutely. Like, my friend is American. She's from Arizona and grew up in like a very fire and brimstone-y type church. And she was in church and she was 14 and she was like, her mum had like bought her first thong and it was like this whole thing. And she wore it, like not thinking about it, and it had come up above her jeans. And a married man behind her looked, his wife saw, and my friend had to go into a meeting with the elders for being a temptress at 14 years old.
Oh my God. I mean...
And his wife was there and she was like, how dare you? Like, you siren.
It's always, it's your fault for tempting me.
Oh, it's never the men's fault.
Classic victim blaming. She went out in a short skirt. She was asking to get raped. She
yes.
was asking for it. But anyway, we're taking a massive tangent into societal pressures on women and etc.
Yeah, so once Tobin was released from jail, I think he served 7 years for the rape of these two girls, he got a job as a handyman under the assumed name Patrick McLaughlin because he wanted to escape the violent sex offenders list which he was on. It blows my mind that in 2006, all you had to do to escape the sex offenders register was change your name.
Yeah, so he went from John Templeton, John Schmempleton, to Patrick McLaughlin, and he was off the sex offenders register. Shut up.
So yeah, he just managed to slip under the radar and get a job in a church.
And here he met a lady, Angelica Cluck. She was a student who was picking up some cleaning work to make extra money while studying. And on the 24th of September 2006, Tobin lured Angelica to a small garage where he tied her up, raped her, stabbed her, and buried her body underneath the garage. And this is the worst bit. Forensic evidence has shown that she was still alive when he buried her.
Yeah. Buried her alive.
Absolute fucking scumbag. Straight after the murder, some claim Tobin went to feed the needy with an organization called Loaves and Fishes that he had been volunteering with for some time. Was this a penance or just like an absolute clear disconnect between the victims and the other people that he was trying to help? Was there something about them that made them unworthy in his opinion?
I don't know, because I think because he's such a serial offender, I don't feel like he loses control. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. He thinks about it before.
Is this just more about, like, image? This is just about who's going to suspect the guy that volunteers for Loaves and Fishes? Mm. Look at John Wayne Gacy, the guy who dresses up as clowns and goes and performs for, like, children's birthday parties.
Yeah.
The guy who's, like, a political, like, you know, a political activist, all this, like, not that he was a political activist in, like, a political party, but just this idea of, like, I was reading this interesting thing, actually, about psychopaths actually needing to show more altruism because it's what that altruism represents. And because their behaviour is not genuine, it's to mimic what right. they think is real behaviour and real emotion. So they yeah. don't know how a real person would behave in that situation. So the best way is to go full because you don't really understand. So it's like fake altruism from psychopaths because they don't understand what real emotions and that looks like, because yeah, it's exactly. all just mimicking behaviour.
I think I read in an article that psychopaths are much more likely to and ah in their speech patterns, mm-hmm. like too much,
yeah.
because they're trying to emulate normal speech.
Absolutely. They make too much eye contact. They're too altruistic openly because it's all about mimicking behaviour. I think that's all this was, really. So after the murder, Tobin then fled to London. London is King's Landing. He was arrested after he was discovered in the hospital under yet another fake name with a fictitious complaint.
Yeah, so he just made it up.
He's not very good at making things up either. And the details of the murder were so gruesome that members of the public were evicted from the courtroom when the images of Angelica's body were shown. It's horrendous.
Now, I remember this being in the news.
Yeah. I remember this, it's awful. Yeah, it was only, 10 years ago? Yeah, it would have been 17. So Tobin was sentenced to a minimum of 21 years. And in 2007, Tobin's house in West Lothian was searched in connection to the disappearance of a 15-year-old girl, Vicky Hamilton, who went missing in 1991 from Falkirk.
We're back in Scotland now,
by the way. Back in Scotland. Beyond the wall.
Tobin had left Scotland days after Vicky's disappearance and moved to Margate.
Beach town.
The police searched Tobin's house in Margate in 2007 and they found the remains of Vicky Hamilton buried under his back garden. Tobin's DNA was all over the sheeting in which Vicky Hamilton's body was wrapped, and he was convicted of this murder and his sentence was lengthened to 30 years. So he racked up another 9 years for this one.
Is that it?
Yeah. Apparently, the judge said, if I could make this concurrent to your 21 years, I would.
Mm.
Then, in 2008, the remains of Dinan McNichol were also found at Tobin's Margate house. Why didn't they find it the first time? Didn't they exhume the whole garden?
Yeah, I know. That seems a bit weird.
They missed that. Dinah had last been seen in 1991 when she was hitchhiking back from a music festival. What an idiot.
Don't victim blame.
I know.
But yeah. Don't hitchhike.
But don't hitchhike
I'm so
either.
Conflicted.
I know, me too.
No, I know what you mean, because it's fucking stupid. If you told me you hitchhiked back from somewhere, I'd be like, you're an idiot. Don't do that. Have you ever hitchhiked?
Never in my life. I'm too scared.
I've done it once. I know.
When?
In Mexico.
Oh my god, how are you not dead?
I know. Well, I don't know what I was thinking, but I basically...
Were you on your own?
No. Okay. No, I was with a friend, but we'd gone to this little, like, cenote, freshwater lake, and they're, like, dispersed, like, all over the countryside. They're just, like, completely random places. And the one we went to was Cenito Escondido, which, like, is actually, like, secret. Like, translates to that, so it's, like, hard to find anyway. We, like, got the bus there, got dropped off. By the time we realised that, like, we were done there, there was, like, no one else there apart from, like, this Mexican man and woman who were, like, also leaving at the same time. So we just, like, they got up to leave and we just, like, sort of followed them out to see where they were, like, how they were going to get out. And it's, like, in the middle of a wood. And we followed them out and they had a car. And the guy had been drinking all afternoon. We'd been watching him and I was, like... Oh, they were like getting ready to drive off and we walked down the road ahead of them. And I was like, we can't walk. We're just on the main road. And they like drove out of the little bit we've been in. I just put my thumb out and he stopped. So we got in his car and he was like, yeah, I'll drop you back. He could have absolutely murdered us.
Oh my God. He could have skinned you alive.
And yeah, he didn't. But he was definitely drunk. There was one point...
I suppose that's a bit different, is that you'd seen him interacting with human beings all day.
Yeah, but still, who knows?
You are a braver woman than I.
It was desperation.
Anyway, Dinah was last seen getting into a man's car alone, and then never seen again. Following her disappearance, withdrawals were periodically being made from her building society account of £250 every few months, which was noted as unusual for those who knew her, because she had always said she wanted to save for travel or to further her education.
But she had gone missing.
She had gone missing, and I think he's doing this to make it look like...
she's alive.
Yes.
Absolutely. And also because, hello, money.
Yeah.
Let's take exactly. that.
I mean, how much is he making as a handyman? This case was the absolute final nail in Tobin's coffin. His defence attorney offered no evidence at all in his trial. Because he was just like, you know what, mate, fucking lost cause. Even I can't help, you know.
Yeah.
His sentence at this point was increased to whole of life. You're never seeing the light of day again. This led to the police opening Operation Anagram, which is still going, because Tobin is still alive. And it's following his movements throughout his entire life. And the main purpose of Operation Anagram is to try and connect him, or see if he is connected to the Bible John killings. So the police are convinced enough that he could be Bible John.
They're still on the case.
They're still on the case.
How much do you want to be on that task force?
Oh my God, that's like my dream. Tobin has also boasted in prison that his body count is 48. He's been convicted for 3.
Yeah.
I think there absolutely are more Peter Tobin murders. I don't know if they're the Bible John ones.
Was Peter Tobin Bible John, or is this just a case of kind of desperate police work? So if we compare the similarities, so Tobin's multiple wives say that he became violent when they were menstruating, as we mentioned. He was a very religious Roman Catholic. He looks like the composite sketch. We've put up the composite sketch of Bible John and Peter Tobin's actual photograph next to each other. So go look at the Instagram and you can see that he does look like the composite sketch.
They do look alike, and also
But also, he just kind of looks like a generic white man.
Yeah, that's very true. But apparently, once Tobin's... this could just be sensationalism, but when Peter Tobin... when there was speculation in the news that he could be Bible John, quite a few women came forward when they saw him on telly saying, that man raped me at the Barrowlands in 68.
Also, he was in Glasgow at the time, and he was known to frequently move between England and Scotland. He met his first wife in the Barrowlands. There's just too many similarities to be a coincidence. One of the multiple fake names he used was John Semple. So, John Templeton, John Schmempleton, John Sempleton, and John Semple.
Yeah.
Oh, piss off. The difference is, though, Tobin was 21 at the time of the Bible John murders, so he could have got in. Could he have got in on the 25 nights? Probably.
I feel like if he knew someone on the door.
Yeah, I feel like this was an over 25 nights for the women. I think they were letting all the boys in. Because they knew that that's what the women were there for, probably.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would have been that difficult for him to get in. He hid the bodies in the 90s. He didn't leave them naked or out in the open.
He buried all of them.
Yeah, and that's Peter Tobin. So Peter Tobin, as we know him as a serial killer, he hid and buried all of the bodies. In fact, he went to meticulous lengths. Things like burying Angelica in the church.
Yeah.
In Bible John's case, he left them all naked, out in the open, incredibly exposed. But also, is there something that Bible John killed women he didn't know, whereas Peter Tobin killed women he did know? And is there something that...
he only knew Angelica. He just picked up the other two.
Then I don't know. And Peter Tobin's first wife claimed that they were on their honeymoon in England at the same time that Jemima MacDonald was murdered. Now, we've read a lot of people saying that she has no reason to lie, but loving a murderer is a complicated thing. Maybe she couldn't handle all the awful things he did to her. The 3 murders he was convicted of. And him being Bible John.
I've read an interview where people are just, you know, oh, after all he did to her, after all he put her through, why would she lie? So many reasons. Billions and billions and billions of reasons.
Absolutely. Much more likely to lie because somebody put you through loads of awful things.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't hold up for me. No, there's no. Also, there's no evidence that in the 90s murders, that they were on their periods. But would that have been possible to know after their bodies were decomposing for so long? Absolutely no way. And also by the 90s, maybe no one was wearing a fucking, like, sanitary utility belt, so he just couldn't tell which women were on their periods.
Yeah.
So maybe he just loved murdering and he was like, you've had a period, I'm going to kill you. And the 90s victims, so the Peter Tobin victims, were all stabbed And none of the 60s, so the Bible John victims, were. They were all strangled with their own tights. That's
the biggest thing for me, is that the MO is different.
But people do change their MOs.
They do, but my issue with it here is if the only thing they have on Peter Tobin was that he was in Glasgow at the time, mm-hmm. he's a piece of work, and he murders women, I'm not sure if that's enough for me
but
to
the
make
Barrowlands,
a Bible John.
He met his wife at the Barrowlands.
I feel like everyone in Glasgow went to the Barrowlands.
Maybe. But I also think, like, okay, hear me out. The strangling is a very physical thing. It's a very manual, like, it's exhausting. Who was it that said, it's actually a lot harder than you would think? A serial killer said it. It's harder than you think to choke the life out of somebody, right?
I think that's John Wayne Gacy, you know.
Maybe. It sounds like it's John Wayne Gacy. So I feel like in the 60s, he's a young lad. He's in his 20s. Mm. He can choke a woman to death with her tights. And he loves it. Up close and personal. It's physical. It's rough. Then, by the time he's in his 50s, he can't control these women as well. He isn't able to. Maybe there's even a bit of a disability in which he isn't able to get that power anymore. Mm. Because it's a sustained thing to be able to choke the life out of somebody and strangle them. So maybe he switches to stabbing because of ease. Not because it's like his MO changes because he wants it to, but because it has to continue to kill women.
Yeah.
Also, another thing is like the ages of the victims are different, but then he ages. The younger the killer, the older the victim. But then I know that doesn't work here. Mm. But there is a correlation and a relationship between the age of the victim and the age of the killer.
Yes, I do see that. So I feel like the big question here is, are we looking at a serial killer whose MO has evolved? Because it did evolve even with the Glasgow killings in the 60s. He started to get smart.
Yeah.
He wasn't leaving them completely naked and out in the open. He was using buildings and things like that. So we already see changes in the first 3 killings. Mm-hmm. God knows how much he could have learned in the 40 plus years.
Mm-hmm. But what stopped Tobin? Let's say that Tobin is Bible John.
Yes.
He kills those 3 women and then nothing until he's in his 50s.
I think nothing he got caught for.
But do you think he murdered more women?
Yes, absolutely. Even if he isn't Bible John, he's definitely killed.
Yeah. I personally think he is Bible John.
I'm like on the fence.
Mm. Because I think there are a lot of things, and I think that the differences can be explained. That's why I think.
But what I'm stuck on is, it feels like all we have is he is a serial killer, he murders women, he was in Glasgow, and he looks like a generic white man.
That's true. It's hard to say, and that's why it's a mystery, and Operation Anagram is still going, live and kicking.
Going strong.
Scotland's most longest and most unsuccessful investigation.
And Tobin is still alive. Mm. He is in prison, and he's had a stroke, he's had a heart attack, and other prisoners have attacked him because they think what he has done is so disgusting. He's recently been described as a frail old hermit who's too afraid to show his face.
Oh.
Poor guy.
Twat.
So that is Bible John. So let us know if you think Peter Tobin was Bible John, or you have another theory, or a case you would like us to cover. You can follow us on everything at Red Handed the Pod.
And join us next time when we will be talking about a really infamous case here in the UK, which is the White House Farm murders, or you may know it better as the Jeremy Bamber case. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you later.